Remember, last week we just started talking about the simple, or asking the question, what if Jesus had never been born? What if Jesus had never been born to this world? What would this world be like? Remember, we compared that to the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, where that poor guy, if he was taken out of that little community he was in, it showed him the emptiness left and the void left in people's lives without him. And we wanted to show you on a larger scale what would have been like if Jesus had been never born here. And so we started last week with asking a lot of questions, answering a number of points. And now today we want to, first of all, investigate the world that Jesus was born in. We're going to look in Matthew chapter 2. Our text will be in Matthew chapter 2. And we'll look at that portion of Scripture in a moment. I want to lay the foundations for what you have in that picture of Matthew 2. Now, Matthew 2 speaks about the time after Christ was born, King Herod and his reaction to the wise men. Remember, the wise men came into town seeking the child who was going to be born king of the Jews. You know, early tradition, earliest ancient scripts said there was 12 wise men. Did you know that? But over time, people can't count, and they counted three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and said, oh, there's three kings, just because they were mentioning three gifts. But you have to understand the text there. The history says 12. It literally does say 12 came. Now, that would make more sense if you think about it. If you have three guys come in town into camels, they're not going to be noticed because everybody came in camels or whatever into Jerusalem at that time. It would be no big deal. But if you get an entourage of 12 guys and all their belongings and all their holdings and a whole caravan roams into town and says, where's the king? That's going to bring attention to the community and say, who are these people? And that's really what happened. It was a noticeably event that really caused a stir. So it even got all the way to the king. And so they were brought in before the king, if you look in that scripture. And they asked, where's the king? And they called his Bible scholars together and said, where in the, when the prophets does it say it? They found it said, Bethlehem. I can't even think today. Duh. Bethlehem. And so they found the scripture, they quoted it, and they worked it out. They gave them a map and said, here's how to get to Bethlehem and so forth. And then they went trying to find the baby. And so there's a lot of activity at this point. But you got to understand something. That world that we're talking about was a world that was cruel toward children. Kids weren't treated with all the joy that we have today. Let me give you some ideas of what happened in that period of time to let you see the horribleness of the day that Jesus came into, to see how this is impacting. First of all, child sacrifice was a common part of the ancient world. Child sacrifice. They have dug up, even in Israel, in the Samaritan area, under King Ahab, they found a cemetery full of jars of babies that were sacrificed, even in Israel. Because remember, Ahab turned against the teachings of God, and one of the things that made God sick was the way they treated life. The value of life in that world, humans were worth about zero. They were worth very little. They were cheap. And so people always were killing their babies, or some of their babies, in worship and religion. But that's only one piece of it. Secondly, abortion and infanticide were common in the Roman world of this day. It was so common that only 2/3 of infants ever lived. They killed off at least 1/3 of the babies on purpose because of many things. The Romans decided they were wanting to pass on their inheritance to others. Well, they didn't want 12 kids fighting over it, so they killed a bunch of them and only kept their population and their family down low so there wouldn't be problems, and they'd still stay rich and powerful over the years in their culture. So they'd bump off their kids. No big deal. Also, they had constant relationships with their slaves and had all kinds of babies through them too. Some they killed and others they didn't really care because slaves were worthless also, which we'll go into in a minute. So it didn't really cost them anything. And they just had free workers for themselves, even though they're their own children. That's how sick these people were at this period of time. 2/3 lived past infancy, but only half of them lived past the years of 8 years old. 50% of children were dead by the time they were eight, in other words. Very few made it to 8 years old. Many reasons, some diseases, some just they killed them. You know, the Romans, actually in the writings, we found that they said it was an act of celebration to kill your child. They would kill their kids over many reasons. And they all were legal by the Roman law to kill your children. The property of the father was his wife and his children and his slaves and his other stuff, his cows and his horses and whatever. He owned them outright. The value of life was very slim. There was some value difference, like a dollar is one thing, five's a different. Well, you know, a child of his was worth more than a slave, but it still wasn't worth much. His wife, well, she was worth a little more than a child, but she still wasn't worth but more than 10 bucks. And they had these values on them. They were very incredible. These people were wicked, wicked people at this culture. And it was a pervasive thought and action across the world at this point. We're not talking about just Rome. You could go to China, you could go to India, you can go all over the world, and the ideas and the concepts were all the same. Understand, life was cheap before Jesus Christ. Also, it was applauded, I already mentioned that, and commonly held that killing your child was an act of beauty. A beauty, I should say, not a celebration. It was an act of beauty. However, that, how do you get that out of there? I have no idea. Roman fathers held absolute tyranny over their children. He could kill them. He could sell them if he wanted to as slaves and get a few extra bucks. He could marry them off to make allegiances with other people, which people in the Middle East still do today. He could divorce them, completely cut them off so they had nothing, no legal requirements to take care of them. Or he could confiscate and steal all their property, even when they were a little older and had property. He could take it all away from them. Nothing could stop him from his complete acts of aggression. Makes me think about Lex Luthor and his dad in Superboy shows, you know. His dad has, and that's the mentality of ancient paganism. The dad had absolute control of them, did anything he felt like, and got away with it, and it was okay and legal. There's just a constant literature and evidence for this across the bar of the world that Jesus was born into. Under Roman law, the birth of a Roman was not a biological fact. Just because they had a baby didn't mean they were Roman or had life. They chose later to decide that. If they did not have the child, they took a child when they were ready. He might, in other words, the father might father 50 kids, but then he only chooses one and says, okay, this is going to be my child. The rest of you are dirt. You're nothing. You don't have my name. You don't have anything to do with me. You're not me. But I'm going to choose this one, and he's going to be my child. I'll choose to raise him in my house. The rest, whatever. You know, they would literally take the babies. They didn't like them. They lifted them up in there to their gods and said, I give you up to them. They would lay them on bridges. They would lay them on towers and cliffs and just let them die, or animals to eat them. They didn't care. Or weirdos come and take them and use them for whatever purposes, which there was a lot of weird things going on at that time. But they would literally just let them set. In China, they said, eyewitnesses from not that many years back from missionaries said that you'd walk down the streets at night, and there would be babies at almost every village, two or three babies were laying out in the street crying because people just throw them out in the street and leave them. So this cultural concept is across the boards of this world. People had a cruel and mental concern for human life, and still many parts of the world still do. Before Christ, a woman's life was very cheap. A wife was the property of the man, no matter what country you talk about in their world. Aristotle. You know, it amazes me that men in our culture want to quote him as some great guy. Here's one of his statements. He said a woman was somewhere between a free man and a slave. He didn't have much value in women. And even if you saw one of the movies they showed was Troy not too long ago. And in Troy, what they showed, it was kind of like you didn't want to watch it. They were showing, they made their wives stand up in the middle of parties and take off all their clothes and stand there like showing off their beauty. And so they were treated like, whatever you want to call it. And the way that they forced them to do it, and now all the guys from all the other communities would gawk at them, and they couldn't touch them because it was that guy's wife, but she was there to display her beauty and her nakedness to all of them. And they thought that was a normal process. They treated women like things, and there was nothing to stop this kind of mentality. Plato, another well-known Greek, taught if a man lived a cowardly life, he would be reincarnated as a woman. You know, these are, and remember, these are looked up as smart guys.
Yes.
They're looked up as authors of democracy and all these things. That's baloney. These people were weird. They definitely were not what people try to make them out to today. And he went even further to say if a woman lived cowardly, she'd come back as a bird. So even down one more step. But see, even back then, reincarnation is an old, old paganistic concept from way back. It's purely pagan. All these thoughts, they're not nothing new under the sun. Little girls were abandoned in far greater numbers than boys. And that's why there was such a shortage of females in the community. Men couldn't find wives. And so they started marrying little girls because that's only the ones they could find because there was such a shortage. You know, in China today, it's the same problem. There are millions and millions of Chinese men who have no hope to ever have a wife because they still practice under communism the same thing. The government of China ordered you only can have one child. Well, to keep your name, you have to have a boy. Well, if everybody has a boy, where's the girls? And suddenly there's millions of these Chinese guys who have no families and never have hope to because they're cutting the population down. And the same thing, if they have a girl, they take and kill it until they get a boy. A lot of them are doing this. And the same issue is even to our present day, the same mentality was way back in paganism of Rome. It tells you that mankind without Christ has not changed. There's not a change in the way they think or act. The elderly were treated horrifically in those days. Many ancient and even near modern cultures killed off their old folks. The Eskimos used to put their old grandpas on an ice thing and push them out and let them freeze to death out in the waters. They used to do all ways to kill them. Even in India, not even up to the present, they've caught Hindus who die. They take their wives and throw them on the fire and burn them up alive with their dead husbands. There's horrific wickedness that goes across mankind's mentality for the human value. Holland has restarted this same thing again called mercy killing or euthanasia. In Holland, it wasn't but a year ago, they were talking about on our news here, where someone took their grandfather to a clinic. He thought he was getting a health check. They went there, injected him with poison, and killed him. They decided his value of life was over, and they decided he should die, and therefore he died. He had not a say in the matter, and this is not uncommon. It was just that happened to be that one report about this person. Europe is starting down the same path of paganism all over again. It started again. Remember, though, this wasn't a big deal a lot of years ago. Even back in 1892, only 1 out of 100 people even lived past the year of 65. There wasn't a lot of old people because they all died anyway. You know, today, with our modern concerns for humanity in America, for one thing, we, plus our technology and medical breakthroughs and understanding how to be healthy and eat the right foods and, you know, not sleeping in dung and all the stupid things that went on before, people live longer. And right away, the mentality of those who are without Christ are thinking of ways to dump off the extra baggage of culture. You hear it from writings and spokesmen. These high-up elitist liberals from our country are talking about how to deal with the problems. Also, there's a new trend in America. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's called granny dumping. It's got a name now. People will go to racetracks or crowded areas, and suddenly they'll leave their grandmothers there and slip away and leave them in the crowd. And they actually abandon them right in the culture for someone else, the government, to take care of them. In America. This is America. This is from, called granny dumping. It's a new trend that's going on, and it's so prevalent they're calling it something now. That's horrendous. Grandma, you want to go on a trip? See how horrible? Can you imagine how evil that is to do that to your own mother? I mean, that's so pathetic, you know? Now, also another thing of this whole culture is slavery. Half the population of the Roman Empire during the time Jesus was born were slaves. In Athens, during their times of power, 3/4 of the population were slaves. The master could kill a slave anytime he felt like it for any reason. He didn't have any responsibility or anything. If he just slit his throat, cut his head off, no one said a word. It was no big deal. It was like killing your dog. Big deal. Today, people will cry about you killing your dog, though. I mean, they would kill their slaves without even I'm tired of you. Kill the guy. Poof, he's dead. As quick as anything. They had no rights, no relationship to society, or to either to the state, the government, or to religious people of that time. The pagan religions were horrible with the same concept. Even though it was has taken years, though, the efforts of Christians alone are the ones who have made the difference in a culture. Because of Christians, slavery is slowly being abolished. Now, you'll hear critics of Christianity say, yeah, well, you read the Bible. Paul says, do this, and slaves, you obey your masters. Where did they ever say anything about slaves being wrong? They never did anything. Remember, Christianity reforms the heart, not the social order. You never find Jesus sitting as a sit-in strike against the Roman government saying, stop abortion, stop slavery. Jesus didn't change by force. He changed people within, and by acting in love, they wouldn't hurt each other and put each other in slavery. With their love, they wouldn't hurt their grandmother and dump her somewhere. They would love their children. The reformation that Christ and God believes in is a reformation with inside. This is why Christianity is so important to understand, why that is the only force that's changed this world. The reason we're in a different world that you were born in and I was in was because of Jesus Christ. If he had never been born, what would this world be like? It would be back to that same harsh world, because that's where it's going right now in our culture when we are kicking God out. It's reverting right back to the same activity. I wanted to add one other strange thing to you that you probably never thought about, and it was cannibalism. In the ancient world, because human life was so cheap, humans were commonly eaten, and nobody wants to talk about this. They think about it in Africa only. The common ancient world, they had constant eating. Here, let me read this one little quote. Historically, before the advent of Christianity, cannibalism was widespread. The flesh pots outside the walls of ancient cities were repositories of bodies of the dead, cooked for the ingestion of the poorest of poor. All of these cities cooked humans, and they fed them to poor people. Nothing like being on the Social Security you get and start getting human meat shipped to your house. Ugh! But that's exactly what they did in all ancient world. They ate people. It's not something that we only think of extremist cases of these pygmies on the islands or in Africa. This was a common practice of the ancient world. You didn't know that, did you? Exactly. So you don't understand how cruel and evil this world was. But again, human life was cheap. It was worth a hamburger. And that's all. And they did it through, that's why they acted the way they did toward their children, toward their wives, toward their slaves, because life was absolutely worthless. See that? And that's why I want you to understand what Jesus did was so incredible. He changed the face of what we are take for granted in this world, in our world, our country here. We would not have the life without Jesus Christ that we have. Now let's look at Matthew 13. Let's go right at some portions of Scripture. Now that I wanted to make sure you felt the world that Jesus was born in. We always sap up Christmas. We make it like it was glowing lights, candles burning, everybody kissed one another, and they all went to see Jesus, and everything was normal. It's not. It was a horrendous, horrible world that Jesus was born into. Now, when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise, take the young child and his mother, flee to Egypt, and stay there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed for Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord to the prophet, saying, out of Egypt I called my son. I want you to think about this simple few words and understand again how this impacts us. First of all, we see that God communicates, in this case, to Joseph, by a supernatural break into his life. Now, he had a dream that God spoke to him. Now, you have to understand, every night that Joseph went to sleep, he didn't have dreams from God. It wasn't like every night, this was not the case. This was an unusual event. Out of normality, he slept like everybody else, and suddenly this night, God gripped him, spoke to him and got his attention and brought him to show him the seriousness of this, what this was going on. This was a serious event, and he needed to make sure that Joseph didn't miss it, understood exactly what was going on, because his son was in great danger. Okay? And so he gives him this dream and says, you need to get up, take the child, and you're going to go to Egypt. Now, this is not an unusual thing. Do you understand that when they went to go to Egypt, it wasn't like they were in an environment where all these Egyptians were there and they couldn't find a friend? Do you understand that every town of Egypt had a whole Jewish population? There was at least 1 million Jews that lived in Egypt at this time. It was common for them to run. Even read back in the old parts of history of the Bible. Where did Abraham and those guys go when there was trouble? They went to Egypt. It was the strong, powerful, like the United States of America at the time. They were rich. They had a lot of stuff. Their economy was booming. They had a lot of food, a lot of money, a lot of gold. All that kind of stuff was there. And then you get little Israel. It's kind of poor and in the wilderness, not a whole lot there. So whenever they wanted and needed some extreme help, they'd run off to Egypt for help. Well, God wanted him to go to a place where there was safety, not dangerous. Egypt was a safe place for him. They were not under the control of Herod, even though they were under the influence and power of Rome. Egypt was a separate entity still. And so therefore, he could go there with his family, have Jewish friends, community, and safety for their family. Okay? Real good thing, not a bad thing. Now notice it says, until the death of Herod, that's where they were to stay. Now, why is the death of Herod so concerning here? I don't know if you understand Herod. Herod was a horrible guy, but he lived just like the normal pagan life of all the Romans. You see, he did the same thing I just talked about. He killed his wife. He killed his children. He killed a bunch of leaders. When he took power as the king, the first thing he did is went to the Jewish Supreme Court system and murdered all of the guys there in town. He went through, anytime he heard of rumors of somebody wanting to take his throne, he killed them. He bumped off more people than you could think of. But remember, he was a legitimate ruler under the power of Rome. We even have written information that Augustus Caesar signed a death certificate or a permission to kill one of his family members. He had to get authority from Rome to bump them off. This is all under authority that he killed his wife and killed his kids. In fact, they said that Augustus Caesar said, I would rather be the pig of Herod than his own family, because he wouldn't kill his pigs like he killed his family. It was dangerous to be in his household. But it was all approved by Rome. So don't think he was some kind of wild man murdering people. He did nothing different than all the other Caesars and people did in Rome. He treated his family with the same legitimate power and authority that Rome had. See how this is not an unusual thing? So this is not unusual. So when this is going on, this is no big deal. It's not a historical event. Just because he wants to go in and kill babies, no one cares. They always killed babies. They always killed slaves. They always killed wives. There was nothing that made a big deal in the dent of history to even warrant a lot of information on it. A lot of people doubt the Bible. They say, well, look at all these things happened. Well, people would write about this. No, they wouldn't. They did it every day. Everybody killed all their kids. It was nothing. There was nothing historical to write down. So he went to town to try to kill the baby. Everybody did. So what's the big deal? See, notice he was in a world that was just normal, which is not our normal, but it was normal to do those things. So nothing historically happened in that event. Now look at verse 16. Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, he was mad. Remember, the guys got a dream once they found Christ. They didn't deceive them. They were going to come back because he wanted to know where the baby was, because he wanted to kill the baby. Well, they got a dream too. God broke into their lives and said it gave them a dream and said, don't tell them that the child's in danger. So it says they went home a different way instead of going back through Jerusalem. So he got mad because they didn't fulfill their promise to him. And it says, he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its districts from 2 years old and under. Now, understand what this is. Again, this is not a slaughter of 20 million people. Bethlehem probably had 20 babies in it. It's a little tiny place. It's like going into the hospital and killing off 20. I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but you understand, we're not saying it's some historical event where millions were killed. 20 babies were probably killed, and maybe some more out in the outlying, in other words, districts, in other words, where the people were like farmers living in their own little house or two with a friend or shepherds, that, so district-wise. You're still talking about 20 to 30 babies about is what happened here. Now, Herod, that's his norm for his lifestyle. Notice the timing. This isn't when the shepherds came at the manger here. This, they calculated the time from the time that these men saw the light sky, their travel time and everything. And so their best guess was the baby was probably between 1 to 2 years old at this time. So in other words, Jesus had lived in that area for a while yet. And now they got to try to find him. They don't know what he looks like or anything. So they made sure, didn't take any chances. So about all 2 year olds and down, they just killed them all just in case. They missed him or whatever. And he just murdered them all. Now, from 2 years old and under, according to the time when he had determined from the wise men. See, so they definitely think that it was almost a 2 year period before they actually got to Israel. So again, our traditions are wrong, thinking here's the shepherds, here's the wise men all standing in the stable going, hey, look, here's the baby. And they're all crunched into this little spot where the, and it's not true. It says, in fact, they found him in his house. They already found a home. They already were settled. They already were raising their family and so forth at this point when they came to them. Now, if Jesus was never born, there would be no change in the value of life. From this morning of the birth of Jesus, from this time of the birth of Christ, his impact was so fulfilling that men changed the way they looked at humanity. You've got to understand this. The reason value of human life is high now is only can be explained through Jesus Christ. Even in our culture who don't claim to follow Jesus, the only reason they have a higher value is because it's so embedded in our culture that over the years of time that Christ and his influence affected the world for almost 2,000 years, it grew bigger and bigger throughout the thinking of mankind. Remember, it took a long time for this to happen. The next day after Jesus was born, Herod was still killing his family and his children. Rome was still murdering their children. But over hundreds of years, Christianity crept underground and kept saving sinners. And the Roman culture got in trouble because more and more people began to love Jesus. And the moment they loved Jesus and came to Christ, the value of humanity changed in their mind than their children's minds, and it kept growing and growing. And just like Jesus' parable that talked about the kingdom of God's like a mustard seed, tiny little thing planted in the ground, but it grows and grows so it's so huge that even birds can land in it. He kept telling you that's how his kingdom was going to affect the world, and it did. It so grew that by almost 600 years, things changed. Let me talk to you a few points, and then we'll close just this section. The value of life was changed because Christ so changes people that the church cherishes life as a gift from God. It's a gift from God. Different from we just happen to come here by evolution or accident or whatever. This changed mentality. We are born as a gift from God. We have children. It says we are gifted by God. We have received this child as a gift from God. In ancient Rome, Christians saved many of the abandoned babies of the pagan culture. The church grew because they kept taking the babies that they found in the streets and on the bridges and on the cliffs, and they raised them and taught them about Jesus. So they got a lot of converts by growing up babies. The reason there's orphanages is because of Christ. There were no orphanages. Nobody cared before. The Christians set up orphanages. They set up baby places to at least help them find a place for giving them as adoption. Christians established adoption. We did all of this in culture. We started it all because we thought humans were worth saving when the whole rest of the world did not consider it of any value. Can you imagine the impact that had through Christ? Abortion disappeared because of the early church. A writer of the second century, we're already talking about 100 and some years after Christ, he wrote this, talking about Christians. They marry, they beget children, but they do not destroy their offspring. They're like, these people are weird. They don't kill their kids. We all kill our kids. And this is found in archaeology. They couldn't explain Christians not killing their babies and their children. Christians were weird to the rest of the cold, cruel world. We stood out as like, what's wrong with those people? They don't even kill their own kids. Who wants to have a family like that living in our neighborhood? You know, it's like these are weirdos. They're ruining the culture. In the 6th century, now you're talking the year 500 and something, so now you're marching 500 years after Christ's birth, the Romans took up the Justinian Code, which was now their laws were beginning to change. First, individual people changed their viewpoint of life. They grew to such a large population that it affected how they wanted laws to be running their society. Look at a simple little quote from this. Those who expose children, possibly hoping they would die, and those who use the potions of the abortionist are subject to the full penalty of the law, both civil and ecclesiastical, for murder. Notice, where did that come from? The Church of Jesus Christ. We called it murder. They said it was an act of beauty to kill your children. Rome suddenly has this whole new group of people coming up from underground, ruining their culture, ruining their paganism, destroying their religious actions, because these crazy people now are taking over, passing laws, saying they can't kill their babies anymore. How rude. Do you see how this same clash is going on in our culture today? Today? Because they have been embedded in our culture for centuries, it's just normal for granted the way we look at things. But if Christ had never been born, human life would still be cheap. And the problem is, it's getting cheaper again. Our nation, as it continues to turn from God, life is becoming and talking about being cheap all over again. That's why we're in a cultural battle again. Abortion, harvesting of aborted babies' brains, and genetic cloning are a growing embedded practice again. And our country is divided 50-50 as a clash. I was just reading again some articles. So many of the people from the liberal left, the Democratic side, and so forth, were so distraught that our president was re-voted in that they're wanting to move to Canada because they can't stand it, that we dare to stand against abortion. And we're bringing them back to the dark ages because we tell them homosexuality is a sin. And they can't stand it. We're ruining their culture. They were at the edge of enlightenment. And we've turned off the lights and forced them back to the dark ages of Christianity. And they're literally writing these words. They're coming from major newspapers. They're coming from major articles. And they literally are talking about exiting our country to Canada. Goodbye. One other thing I wanted to mention. Even remember the Roe versus Wade was the Supreme Court decision that actually forced abortion upon our culture when our culture was a Christian concept. It was amazing when I found this. Harry Blackmun, he was one of the Supreme Court justices who actually wrote this. Here's what he said. It's a quote. If I were to appeal to religion, I would appeal to the religions of Rome and Greece. He wants to go back to cannibalism, murdering babies, killing. I mean, what kind of religion he wants to go back to? He literally, that's a quote from him. Appeal to reason and religion? How sick can you be? This man either never really studied what the impact of that would be, or he just plain is evil, I don't know. But why would you even do that? Well, we're in a great struggle in our nation again. And the question really is, will we go back to paganism and tyranny? Or will we stand for the truth which lifts up the value of humanity? And that's a legitimate question you have to face today and I have to face. If we do not stand for what's right, corruption will continue. If it wasn't for a lot of Christians standing up and voting, saying, whoa, 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 it's not a matter of just whether you're going to get certain taxes or whatever. They were talking about pushing a lot of evil down the throats, basic paganism, back into our culture. and we held them back this time. But what about next election? It's going to continue to clash because the hearts are evil again. So what is the solution? What is the answer? What makes Christ influential in our culture again? What do we must do? Do we go out, stand and picket against abortion clinics? How are we going to make a difference in this culture? We can't make a pagan think right. But if they're converted to Jesus, they change the values of their mind and they will naturally love God and say, oh yeah, babies are important. Oh yeah, women are important. Oh yeah, we don't want slavery. And oh yeah, we don't want to harvest babies' brains. That's sick. See, today the sickness of the way. Do you actually know they're writing these extremist groups that are looking for, they're called like Greenpeace groups. And it's not a Greenpeace group, I forget what it was called. But they actually have publications. One of their stupid publications actually said, do you know, have you ever considered the extermination of the human race? I should have showed you the quote. It said, all problems of this world can be traced back to humans. If we got rid of humans, this world would save a lot of, billions of creatures would be alive today. I thought, great, you guys go out and kill yourselves then, if you're so concerned. They literally want humans to die, and they're writing the articles, and they're humans. How stupid can you get? They see the value of animals higher than humans. Crazy culture that we've entered. Paganism is back. And the mentality behind it, just because they're not falling down before idols yet, the entire thinking process is here. The pagan culture is back without all the, so far, all of the idols and stupidity that went with it. But the culture is already underground here in our America, and millions adhere to it. If Jesus was never born, the world would be far more miserable than it is today. And I guarantee you, in fact, let me give you one last example, how morality is so tied up to the value of life. Back in only 1844, not that long ago, a guy named H.L. Hastings visited the Fiji Islands. When he went there, he found a culture where you could buy a human for $7. When you bought that human, you could work him, whip him, starve him, eat him, and many did eat them, even in 1844. They were cheaper than a cow. Well, if you think of life, well, we don't have as much meat as a cow, so I guess they would be cheaper if you figure they're no valuable more than a cow is. He went back through his travels years later, he revisited, but he found a whole different thing going on. Everywhere on the island he went, he found these Christian chapels everywhere. Christianity invaded the island and ruined it for him. Then he found you couldn't buy a human, even if you paid millions of dollars. Nobody would let you buy a human. They had changed the value of humanity and no one was for sale. Because Jesus Christ completely bent the culture to a different mentality. One other example, in World War II, in the South Pacific, they had come across some people from an island, and they found this guy who was dressed like Americans with a Bible in his hand. He was an islander. And the American soldier said, we modern intelligent people put very little value in that old book anymore. And that native man said, that's too bad. You see, if I didn't put any value in this book, you'd already been eaten because we used to be cannibals. The only reason you're alive right now is because I do believe in this book. And that's 1944, 45. Tell me that Jesus is not worth anything. Tell me that he doesn't have value. Our nation who ignores him, our community right here who ignores him, is still living under the value of his presence in this world. If it wasn't for them, they would not have freedom, nor they might not even be alive today. If they still bumped off the babies like they did back then, many of them wouldn't even have been born. I'm telling you, folks, you must understand the value of Jesus Christ. Without his life, you would have nothing. And that's just the human side. The human side. Remember, you still will face eternity in hell. unless you've truly turned from your sin and yourself and admitted that you're a liar or you're a thief or you're a blasphemer or an adulterer at heart or many other things. Until you come to the place where you say, oh me, I have been a great criminal against you. I have broken your laws. Even though I feel good about myself, even though that you say what I've done is a crime, God forgive me. I didn't think lying was that big a deal. God says you'll get the death penalty for it. It's a big deal to God. It doesn't matter what we think, does it? The value of the crime is in God's eyes. Just like we've devalued human life, we've devalued the commands of God. And in a culture like ours where we devalue the commands of God, we are put into great concern before the living God. And God says, you can play all the games you want, America, but you will face me at judgment. We all will face God at judgment. Are you playing with God in your life? Is your Christianity just because one time you think in your mind you prayed a little prayer and you're in? Or has your life been transformed by the power of Jesus? You've turned from your sin. You've given him complete and absolute control, and his word is the ruler of your life. That's what makes Jesus Lord, isn't it? When his word rules over your word. What he says is what you do, not what you decide to do and think God will forgive me later. It's an absolute breakdown of saying, God, forgive me. I'm a sinner. From no longer will I serve myself. I give it all to you. I was rereading an article, All or Nothing. Cheryl became a Christian from that booklet. Remember? And that booklet, I was just rereading it this last week. All or Nothing is not a good term for Americans anymore. We don't like the word all for one thing. We don't like the word commitment for another thing. And we sure don't like the other thing of that we get nothing out of it. We want something out of it without giving anything into it. But God says, you face my laws, you face my judgment, and you give it all, or else I will turn you away into everlasting judgment. We don't want that from anybody here. It's not important that they have joy this season, sing songs, drink eggnog, have fun with their families, kiss their babies, does it? When it's all said and done, who cares? The greatest atheists kiss their babies and put up Christmas trees. But what about us? How are we different? If Christ made a difference in this world, what difference are you making today?